This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Until TV's The Apprentice, most Americans probably thought of the concept of apprenticeships, where young people coming into an industry learned at the feet of masters, to be an ancient, outdated concept. On the contrary, apprenticeships are very much alive and part of the workforce development situation across the country. Indeed, about 375,000 people work as apprentices, and President Obama wants to double that number in the next 5 years. To that end, and because they want to build this region into a hub of global commerce, a consortium of, I believe, the number keeps changing, by the way, but a consortium of about 14 area community colleges have gotten together, and they're getting worldwide attention for their efforts. So to find out about this renaissance of apprenticeships, why they are important, and how these area community colleges are working together, we've invited Mary Vickers-Cuck to join us. She is the dean of the Harris Campus of Business and Industry Learning at Central Piedmont Community College. Are you the epicenter of all of this?
Of global commerce. Good morning.
Good morning. Steve Partridge is president and CEO of Charlotte Works. That's the Workforce Development Board here in Charlotte and Mecklenburg County. Welcome back.
Thank you.
And Craig May is market manager for JPMorgan Chase Middle Market Banking in North and South Carolina. Thank you for being here as well.
Thank you.
I've never heard of the term middle market banking. What does that mean?
Well, it's part of commercial banking, and a lot of companies will differentiate between segments inside of commercial. But broadly speaking, most people refer to commercial banking and middle market banking as companies that are not large, not Fortune, 500 or Fortune 1000. So you're generally looking at companies that are like $20 million in revenue to $2 billion in revenue.
Okay. So it has nothing to do with market size. It has to do with the company's size.
That is correct.
Okay. Why, Mary, is workforce development such a hot-button issue right now? I mean, we've got this consortium going. The president wants to talk about more apprenticeships. Why are colleges, for instance, at the forefront of this, as opposed to industry being at the forefront?
That's an interesting question. I think that there are two reasons. One is all the economic developers tell us the number one question of site selectors when they're looking at a region is the workforce and how trained is the workforce. And so we want to ensure that we have a trained workforce. The other is that there is something called a skills gap, and it's a middle skills gap. Back to the middle, Craig. And so, but this is particularly for people who need more than a high school degree, but the high school diploma, but they don't necessarily need a university 4 years. And so there is training that they need to get the job, and we want to ensure that they have it. Right now in the Charlotte region, there are 8,000 manufacturing jobs available. Well, we want to ensure that we have trained people so that they can have good jobs and that the companies are able to find the talent that they want.
Steve, you've called government efforts at workforce development fractured. Mm-hmm. How so?
Well, I think, when you talk about workforce development, you assume there's this omnipresent system that people kind of plug in and plug out over time. And everyone's trying to get people back to work. They're trying to upskill folks. But often there isn't a coordinated approach to how we handle that nationwide. I think in Charlotte we've done better than most communities, and that's why I think we get a lot of national attention, that workforce boards are working with the community colleges, that are working with the universities to try to manage people's careers, because most folks don't know what the jobs of the future are going to look like. So when they enter college or freshman, what do I need skills-wise on the back end? And we don't do a good job of that from K-12 forward on really advising folks on where the jobs are.
You work with Charlotte Works, which is part of the Workforce Development Board, and you've been working to transform it, as I understand this, from a traditional workforce development program to a demand-driven economic development organization. That's what you're talking about here, to make sure we know what the demand is and then figure out how to fill it.
Mm-hmm. I think we've not done a good job listening to the employers. For the most part, they're the ones that are creating jobs, but often we're creating programs and sending people back to school in a vacuum. Someone comes in, they're unemployed, says, "Where should I go to work? Where are the hot jobs?" And you tell them based on maybe what you've read on TV, read in the paper, saw on TV. We get a lot of people interested in jobs that don't exist here in Charlotte, but they think they've done the research, And we sit down with them and say, you know, these are the jobs we really need in Charlotte. These are the high demand areas over the next 5 years. But you only get that intel a lot by talking with employers. What are the skill gaps, as Mary talked about? What skills can't you find, you know, as an HR manager, recruiter? What keeps you up at night? What won't you find? And if they can't find it here, they'll find it somewhere. Mm-hmm. They'll either bring someone in, which is a high cost structure for businesses to have to keep recruiting people out of market, or they'll move their facility into a market where they can get the people. And we don't want that here in Charlotte. We want to make sure that we've got the trained workforce to keep
When you're talking about moving a facility, is that mostly manufacturing jobs they can't find people on the floor, or is it management jobs that they can't find?
It's across the board. I mean, when you hear the front page of the Observer announcing jobs moving to Charlotte, it's manufacturing at times, but it's corporate headquarters.
It's IT. It's health, and it's global logistics and transportation.
So it's not always the tax incentives that bring companies to a location. It's sometimes the fact that they can find the people to fill the jobs.
That's what the economic developers tell us, that the number one question is the people, the workforce.
We hear more and more about public-private partnerships, Craig. You say they are crucial for boosting our local economy. Why are they so crucial? Why doesn't the traditional way of doing things work as well anymore?
Well, it takes, a broad sector of people to help address these issues. We've had the fortunate opportunity to work with entrepreneurs, with business leaders, with local not-for-profit leaders, with local government officials to help address some of these issues. And in large part, the focus is to help this economy, this local economy, thrive and prosper. And it does take that partnership. And whether it is in terms of funding grants to help programs, funding grants to help do needs assessment, funding grants to help do to help identify strategies and tactics around it, it takes us all to help address the workforce gap and to help us drive global commerce here.
Is the Charlotte Regional Collaborative for a Global Economy, which I believe is what that consortium of 14 community colleges is called, is that an example of a public-private partnership?
It is, because we do work with businesses so much. And J.P. Morgan Chase believes in workforce readiness. And so as part of that, they've helped us, and we're going to do a skills inventory with all of those 14 colleges to see where the gaps are in terms of the training we provide so that we ensure we have it.
Now, this started 10 months ago, if I understand. I know that CPCC has been involved in this for a long time, but this consortium started 10 months ago, and the first figure I read was there were 10 colleges involved. Then the number was 13. Now it's 14. Is that because more colleges are getting on board?
Exactly. The community colleges in the western part of the state asked to be a part of it, and we went and recruited community colleges in South Carolina because we think that regional aspect is so important to be globally competitive.
Well, it's because you have the aim, I understand, of making this region a hub of global commerce. Who or what is the driving force behind that goal?
It is a group of leaders. There are 160 of them called the Global Vision Leaders Group. It is led by Dr. Tony Zeiss, who's the president of Central Piedmont Community College, with the idea of what's the next game-changing effort in the region.
Is that a realistic goal for Charlotte, the Charlotte region, to become a global hub of commerce or a hub of global commerce?
I think you have to think globally. I think we're too myopic a lot of times in the economic development world of thinking our competition is Columbia, South Carolina, or Cincinnati, or Nashville. Jobs are global now, and if you're going to attract the jobs here to the U.S. and to Charlotte area, you have to sort of position yourself in that realm.
J.P. Morgan Chase is an enormous bank. Why does it care about this effort in this area?
That's a great question, and it's really simple. If the local communities where we live and work, if they thrive and prosper, so do we. And so that's part of the focus that we've had through our philanthropic efforts, is to ensure that the cities that we are located will thrive and prosper.
Okay. I also read about a talent pipeline partnership. I think that's something separate from the consortium, but it's a network of organizations within Mecklenburg County. Who runs that? How does that interface, or does it interface with this?
That's part of the beauty of Charlotte. Things emerge, and I think that this whole idea of a Global Vision Leaders Group emerged, and therefore the Talent Pipeline Partnership, where all of us who are interested in Talent Pipeline being from the very beginning, maybe through CMS, through the community colleges, into the jobs, that it is a pipeline, and we have to think of it that way, and we have to be connected with CMS, the community colleges, the universities, and industry. So that's the talent pipeline. So a group came together, and so it's Charlotte Works, and it's Central Piedmont, and it's the Chamber of Commerce, it's the City of Charlotte, it's Mecklenburg County, it's Goodwill. And CMS representative on that. Mm. So we want to make sure that we are unified in our approach to developing this talent for businesses so that we don't have this skills gap that I mentioned earlier.
The middle skills gap that you're talking about. These are people that don't need a four-year degree but need more than a high school diploma, and that's where these community colleges, as you said, are coming in. Last week, Steve, North Carolina and the rest of the country, I believe, observed National and North Carolina Apprenticeship Week. This apprenticeship thing is something, at least to, the last time I thought about apprentices, we were studying world history. And
a thousand years ago.
Right, and how people came to this country and sometimes apprenticed themselves. I think people were apprenticed to Paul Revere in the silversmithing trade up in New England. How big a part of workforce development and here and around the country are apprenticeships all of a sudden?
Not as many as we'd like. You know, in North Carolina, we've had a strong history of apprenticeship, but I think we're at an all-time low, actually. And you look at South Carolina, that's had a resurgence, partly because they have a tax credit.
I actually thought this had gone away, that this had gone the way of the dodo. This, not so. It's been with us ever since 1775 and ongoing.
And the skills gap is what's made it more popular of late. And you asked earlier about businesses stepping up. This is where businesses are stepping up, because they are investing in apprentices.
So define an apprentice. Define apprenticeship. What does it mean in the 21st century?
It is a way to earn while you study, because they are employed by the company. They might be on a contract basis, but they earn wages, and they are also working usually towards a degree, but it could be a credential. It doesn't always have to be an associate's degree.
So it's not an internship. They are being paid. And they're also going to school.
Absolutely. They are earning some credential or degree.
And unlike apprenticeships in the 1700s, you're not beaten if you don't.
I don't think so.
We had a breakfast last week to honor the companies who have apprentices. And we had a panel. And they had two young apprentices on it. And they say that they chose this over university, partly because it's affordable, and so they don't have that college debt, which I know you've already talked about before. And also, it gives them opportunities. They might be a master machinist, but they might go into sales. They might go into management. So there are lots of opportunities with apprenticeships.
And why – we have a minute left, but why is the president, President Obama, so keen on doubling the number of apprentices in the next 5 years?
Because it gives people jobs, and you don't have the skills gap, because they get to practice the job, and the people – companies like them and hire them.
And it eats away at the ever-growing college debt, because you don't incur it in the first place?
Right on.
We need to talk more about that when we come back, because I think that's something that really keeps people away from colleges, or certainly imperils their success after they get out of college, because they got this mound of debt sitting on their heads. But we have to take a break. We're talking about apprenticeships, workforce development, and the Charlotte Regional Collaborative for a Global Economy, a consortium of 14 area community colleges, of which I think CPCC is the epicenter of it all. We have to take a break. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Bradley Arendt Bolt Cummings, LLP, a full-service law firm whose lawyers are industry professionals experienced in serving the banking and financial services industry in Charlotte and throughout the nation. Details at babc.com. And Mecklenburg County Solid Waste, celebrating America Recycles Day, Saturday, November the 14th, hosting a paper shredding event at the Hal Marshall Center, 9 to noon. Limit of 3 banker boxes, wipeoutwaste.com. The flu season is upon us. Will this year's vaccine work better than last? Last year, the flu virus mutated, so it didn't work so well. And what kind of a flu season are we going to expect? We'll find out about that tomorrow at 9. And on Thursday evening at 7 o'clock, we'll be at Lenoir Rhine University, where we'll interview pop culture writer Chuck Klosterman as part of Lenoir Rhine's Visiting Writers Series. You can join us at the Monroe Auditorium, and you can find out more details at WFAE.org/CharlotteTalks.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu meets with President Obama at the White House for the first time in more than a year. Tensions between the two leaders and prospects for renewed trust and cooperation.
Join the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about workforce development today with Mary Vickers-Cuck, Dean of the Harris Campus of Business and Industry Learning at CPCC. Mm-hmm. Steve Partridge is President and CEO of Charlotte Works, part of the Workforce Development Board, and Craig May is Market Manager for JPMorgan Chase in Middle Market Banking in North and South Carolina. They're involved in the Charlotte Regional Collaborative for a Global Economy, which is that consortium of 14 colleges. Through a grant that they've given them, I think in a six-figure grant, as a matter of fact, if I'm not mistaken, for what purpose?
Well, the most recent grant is to help do several things. The first is to really do a needs assessment study in the region to determine where the gaps are, specifically around training. It also provides some research around what the competitive assets currently are. It does fund some of the regional summits that we have, this actually three, and then it helps fund the general operations initially of this group.
Mm-hmm. One of you just said that we have a shortage of apprentices. We'd like to have more apprentices, and I understand that CPCC needs more businesses who want to start apprenticeship programs. Which comes first, the chicken or the egg, the apprentice or the programs?
I think you have to have the companies first. And then to Steve's point about being demand-driven, then we will ensure that we have the curriculum to support what the companies need.
Is it difficult? Have you found it difficult to get business on board with these apprenticeships?
We did previously. They tended to be companies from Germany or Austria or Switzerland where they understood it, yeah. Where they have a dual education system, which means you work and go to school at the same time. Of late, more American companies are interested because of the skills gap that they are experiencing.
Because I believe in 1995, CPCC started Apprenticeship 2000, which was the name of the program then.
And that was a consortium of businesses who started it, and they came to us. They get the credit for it.
Okay.
And so we developed curriculum around that. Since then, we have grown it. We have about 100 apprentices right now. We have 12 companies. A big one is Cummins out of Indianapolis. They chose Central Piedmont to start their apprenticeship program, and so they put the workers in extended stay, and they go to school at Central Piedmont, and then they go back and work in whatever company, whatever factory they're working in across the nation.
You mentioned that this collaborative of 14 colleges, you went out and recruited South Carolina community colleges to be part of this, and in fact, South Carolina, if I'm right about this, actually leads this state in the number of registered apprentices available. South Carolina offers a $1,000 per apprentice tax credit. What does that mean, and what is a registered apprentice?
It's recognized by the state, or it could be recognized by the federal government, so that it is very portable, so that you can go to another company and say, I have this apprenticeship credential. And so that they can get a job more readily.
And the $1,000 tax credit that South Carolina gives, they give to the students participating in apprenticeship
programs? They give it to
programs,
the companies.
To the companies. Is that a real incentive? Is $1,000 a real incentive?
You know, I really don't think so. I think it's a – you know, we've talked to a lot of companies, and we used to impose a fee of $50 that companies in North Carolina would have to pay every year to keep registered apprentices. And it was more of an insult. They're saying, we're training the workforce. We're helping close North Carolina's skills gap, and you're going to charge us $50 for the privilege of doing that? So they've done away with that this past year. But I think the $1,000 is more a commitment to the business community to say, this is an important way we need to train our future workforce.
Now, traditionally, apprentices learned, I said this in the beginning, at the feet of masters. If you wanted to be Paul Revere silversmith, then you watched the guy and you did menial tasks and learned and worked your way up to becoming a master craftsman. Is this a similar situation? Are you really in touch with the people who really know what they're doing
in these
companies?
And the companies get a lot of credit for that. They always have an apprenticeship coordinator. Companies like Detweiler, Siemens, Bloom, they have somebody who's specifically assigned to the apprentices, and then they go and they get the master craftspeople to be their mentor. And they do sit at their feet, and they do learn how to do it. Mm-hmm. And so they have to train these people on how to be mentors. So the companies invest a lot in that mentorship that you're talking about.
J.P. Morgan Chase, we've talked a little bit about why they are involved here in this region and what you've done in this region in terms of supporting these efforts. But you're a global bank. Are you doing this in a lot of different areas across the country, across the world?
Yes. We launched in 2012. In a joint project with the Brookings Institution called Global Cities Initiative. That effort was really aimed to help local metro areas sort of navigate the complex global environment, help them be competitive. And it has led a lot of those communities to launch their foreign direct investment plan or their export plan. And specifically in the Carolinas, the upstate, Greenville-Spartanburg, and that region has recently completed their export plan and are in the process of working on their foreign direct investment plan. Mm. Atlanta has done something very similar.
Before we started this program, put a question out on social media. We want to hear from you. Let us know what your thoughts are about apprenticeships and the partnerships for workforce education that we're talking about today. You can reach us through Facebook or Twitter or through email at charlottetalks@wfae.org. And Tom in Chester has responded this way. Please ask your panel, how do you shatter the myth that all good jobs require a 4-year college degree?
Yeah, I think that's the biggest danger to the transformation we're trying to create is that many of us in the workforce, in the education world, say that there's other options, but we push our own kids or people we know, no, you still need the 4-year degree. And it's never going to go away, but I think that we talk about lifelong learning. We talk about continuity. Going straight from high school to a 4-year institution probably doesn't work for a lot of folks. You look at the completion rate, and it tells us it doesn't work. But we don't offer a lot of investment and time and resources into telling people about the other options.
Let me ask a rude and prickly question then. Are we changing our advice here, saying you don't need a 4-year degree because so many people can't achieve a 4-year degree because they haven't been prepared properly for college in the first place?
There's some of that, but I think what we need to say is it's not a 4-year degree. You need some sort of post-secondary education because it doesn't necessarily for every job require a bachelor's degree. But businesses are guilty. Sometimes we throw the bachelor term on a job description and say bachelor's degree required. And if you look at what the job really does, it does not require that. It might be an associate, might be a certificate. But we don't talk about the other things because we just lump it all in the 4-year bachelor's degree. Post-secondary is how we should start to look at it, even more than our high school completion rate. We need to look at post-secondary attainment in our region and see if that, because I think the number I've seen from Brookings, 60% of all jobs being created in Charlotte require some sort of post-secondary.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at the numbers, we're not even there yet. I think Charlotte's around 50% right now post-secondary attainment.
Stuart, who is now a professor, says, I completed a traditional apprenticeship maintaining factory machinery in the early 80s in North London in the UK. This was a transitional time from age 16 to 20. I learned a lot about technology, physics, chemistry, materials, and other sciences. Most importantly, during this transition, I was mentored on an individual basis by skilled peers and learned the discipline and responsibility of transitioning into the adult world. Clocking in and working 7 days a week was a shock when I started out of high school, but in the long term instilled a work ethic that persists to this day. Now, he's talking about 16 to 20, which are the high school and early college years. You're talking about older people, are you not, or are you talking about somebody in that age bracket?
I think you're talking about a mix. And many of the kids that enter some of these apprenticeship programs can sometimes complete their senior year of high school in an apprenticeship program. So it's a full range of students, whether it's just out of high school or it's transition adults. we do find it harder, you know, if you're a 40, 50-year-old, it's to make a switch into something completely different. It's not as attractive for a lot of adults. Mm-hmm. But for a lot of folks who are maybe in their 20s, early 30s, a career change like this is still an option for folks.
Leonard in Charlotte writes, I'm listening to the discussion this morning and am a 20-year apprenticed licensed electrician here in Charlotte. If the state is focused on growing apprenticeship programs, why is it so difficult to find instructor certification requirements and instructing opportunities? Everybody at the table is looking at you, Mary. So I guess you must have the answer.
Well, our dean over that and electrical, Jay Potter, I think what we have to do a lot of times is hire adjunct instructors to do it because the demand comes and goes with the businesses. And so when the businesses need it, then we need instructors. And so we are working, that's interesting, with the construction industry to build more apprenticeships. We've sort of talked about it sometimes in terms of manufacturing because they've been the leaders, but we certainly are building it in construction. And also we would like to build it in IT.
You just talked about things we haven't done yet or we're thinking about doing, but we've done a lot already. And, in fact, I understand that this region is beginning to attract national, even international attention for what it's doing in the area of workforce development and apprenticeships and things like that. The Chicago Tribune is sending a reporter here to study what we're doing.
He was here yesterday.
Why is he here? What is going on here that he's reporting or he or she is reporting on?
They see opportunity to close the skills gap also. And so they are looking at these public-private relationships, how businesses work with the community colleges and doing it. As I said, he was just here yesterday, and I was in Raleigh talking to our counterparts at Wake Tech, so I don't know exactly the angle they were taking, but mm-hmm. we are pleased that they came and asked us.
Why? Do we want that kind of attention? Seriously, if we are working to build this into a world global hub, shouldn't we be doing it stealthily, particularly if Chicagoland is looking at us for ideas?
I think if you're talking about trying to bring companies to Charlotte and create jobs, you want to talk about it because, again, when companies show up and they're still in that code name mode, you know, they've already narrowed down the incentives, the road access, all the things that were up in competition with other communities. What they show up is asking how we're going to deliver the talent when they build their facility or open their doors. And the more we talk about how we've got something that works here, helps us with those ED leads. Mm.
The U.S. Chamber of Commerce Foundation wrote an article recently titled, Will Charlotte Become the Next Economic Powerhouse? Before we talk about that, give me some examples of other cities, regions that are economic powerhouses outside of New York.
Singapore, Portland, Oregon.
Portland, Oregon, mm-hmm. Really?
And they, Craig mentioned earlier, the Brookings Institute and the funding that J.P. Morgan Chase has given, they have a worldview that they want to be globally competitive. And the Brookings Institute says that's the number one trait. You have to have a worldview. And as a native Charlottean and being very, very proud of that, I do think this is our new landscape to have a worldview because we haven't always. And that's part of the growing up process. Mm-hmm. But I think we have to put our stake in the ground and say that we are globally competitive. And part of what J.P. Morgan Chase is going to fund is for us to look at our assets and what assets we should have to be on the world stage globally competitive and so that we can build to that.
Are we on our way to becoming the next economic powerhouse?
We certainly
enjoy a lot of local resources here. If you just look at the obviously, our central location, the intermodal facility, the airport, the infrastructure that we have is phenomenal. And so what we're trying to do is make sure that we have the labor force, that we have the incentives to help continue to attract businesses to want to invest in this region.
Where are we on the sliding scale of becoming a Singapore or a Portland, Oregon? We compare ourselves a lot to Portland, so that kind of fascinates me that they're ahead of us here as well. They're ahead of us in a lot of things. Where are we on this on the continuum?
Well, you know, it's interesting because there are several statistics that you can look at to say, okay, we're behind the curve or ahead of the curve.
Right.
A lot of it could be what are the percentages we receive in terms of direct foreign investment or what type of export and trade do we see here. We made huge strides in 2014 in this region growing exports. We actually grew at almost 21% last year.
We were the fastest growing region in the United States.
What are we exporting?
A lot of manufacturing goods out of this region.
Mm-hmm. So if we were to become this economic powerhouse, and I guess that's one of your goals, isn't it? I mean, you want to become
a
global...
Oh, it is. The region become that, yes.
If we were to become that, how would it change the region? How would it change life in the region? How would it change ordinary people's lives who are listening here in the region? I mean, is there a vision for that? Do we understand what it means?
I won't say we completely understand it. We are working towards that. What happens, though, is the excitement that builds. There is another momentum to bring global soccer to Charlotte. And it's not because of this, but it is in line with it, and it creates the excitement about it. And so it's kind of integrated that you would have global soccer, that you would have the economic well-being so that everybody who wants a job can have a job, and that we have good jobs that pay well. And I personally convicted about this because when I travel in the Midwest or other places where the cities are dying, some of them are dying, I don't think we're going to have that because we have this vision that we're going to be a global powerhouse.
Mm. The Chamber of Commerce wrote what Charlotte has taught us, the National Chamber of Commerce, what Charlotte has taught us is that by listening to the business community and collaborating with the colleges and economic developers, cities can build better outcomes for both businesses and its local workforce. I take it that that predates this consortium of 14 community colleges. Maybe not, but I think it does. What have Charlotte businesses, colleges, and economic developers been doing to reach that stage already without the help of the consortium?
Well, I think that there's a network, and I think that's one of the strengths in Charlotte, that there is a network. Nobody is waiting for some really high authority figures to tell us what to do. Nobody's waiting for the government to tell us what to do. It is this consortium. And when other executives from other cities come, they always state that. It's not something that we bring up, but they state the collaboration between the government, between businesses, between education. And I think that's a striking feature of Charlotte that we might not know when we're in the middle of it sometimes.
Mm-hmm. We're already home to a number of Fortune 500 companies. We're either the U.S. headquarters or a national outpost for companies from elsewhere around the world. I think there are some 200 German companies that operate out of the Charlotte region. Why? Because this all predates the workforce collaborative. Why?
Well, I think we've got some historical ties to Germany from our founding days.
Yeah.
But as you look at what challenges Germany faces, they have a shrinking workforce. They have an aging workforce. They're not growing in quite the same way. And so they're looking for outposts, and the American market offers the stability and similarity that they're looking for. The challenge is often the workforce. I mean, we'd like to see 400 German companies here, but we've talked to them. You know, they're worried about, can we deliver the type of workers they need? And I think CP and other organizations have been great at listening to the customer and designing programs that meet that need, that help us go sell Charlotte overseas.
But you still have to have students interested in doing – if you find out that there's a need for a particular kind of job, and so you and the consortium gear up to serve that, you've got to bring students into that. You've got to let them know that this is a job that pays well and it's available now, and we can train you for it. How do you do that part of it? How do you bring them in?
We invested in a career hub on our website, and it has labor analytics about the jobs in demand, and it is the most touched website in all of CPCC. It's career hub on our website.
Mary Vickers-Cuck is Dean of the Harris Campus of Business and Industry Learning at CPCC. Steve Partridge is President and CEO of Charlotte Works with the Workforce Development Board. And Craig May is Market Manager for JPMorgan Chase Middle Market Banking in North and South Carolina. We have to take a break. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Bojangles, featuring the Big Bow Box for tailgating, includes chicken biscuits, fixins, and freshly steeped iced tea, available all day at area Bojangles. Also, Iron Yard, existing to create growth and mentorship for people and their ideas through tech-focused education. Enrollment available for 12-week courses dedicated to teaching code and more. Information at the Iron Yard. The president of the University of Missouri system resigned yesterday, and the chancellor of the university's main campus in Columbia announced he is also stepping aside. Their moves are in response to student protesters who charged that the university failed to adequately respond to recent racial incidents, racial tensions on the campus, and debate over a university administration's response to the topic of the conversation in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock. On the Diane Rehm Show, you can join us on Facebook or Twitter at WFAE or email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org. We're coming right back.
Sally Phillips of Mariner in Charlotte talks about underwriting on WFAE.
You get the benefits of traditional advertising without any of the negatives. Nobody's screaming at you. It's very concise. It's productive. It's not full of claims and things that may or may not be true.
For more information, email underwriting@wfae.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about workforce development and specifically about the Charlotte Regional Collaborative for a Global Economy, which is a collaborative of 14 regional community colleges spearheaded by Central Piedmont Community College. Mary Vickers Cuck is the dean of the Harris Campus of Business and Industry Learning at CPC. She's with us along with Steve Partridge and Craig May. We've also asked people on Facebook, Twitter, and email to join us with their questions. Joe says, regarding interested workers in their 40s and 50s, how can we change employers' views of the seasoned worker who has highly developed transferable skills who wants to learn something different? Is an apprenticeship program a way to start a second career in a way?
It is. I mean, we're trying to expand apprenticeship beyond the traditional industries, construction, manufacturing, as Mary mentioned, IT. And I think people have the mindset that apprenticeship has to be a very structured, time-intensive program, when really it's about competencies and how you learn.
If students are apprentices and they're working and they're going to school, can you keep your first job? If you're a full-time employee and you're 45 years old and you want to change into some other area, can you keep that job, apprentice yourself to a second job, get the education required to do that, all at the same time? Or do you need to quit the first job, go back to school, and become an apprentice?
Maybe if you don't sleep, you could pull that off. But
I think you have to be committed to the job for as the apprentice. But I think that, you know, you're a caller earlier who said that he worked 7 days a week. We don't work 7 days a week in the United States today.
So if you found yourself out of the workforce, because they've said when the recession hit, a lot of the jobs we lost were never coming back.
Right.
So if you find yourself and have been in that position for a while, is this a good alternative to launch yourself into something that might serve you well for the second part of your career life?
I think so. We saw that during the downturn. A lot of people in financial service and others were all of a sudden their jobs gone. There were
right.
no more jobs in the banking sector when what they did, and they sort of explored. The mindset change is you have to make a big switch, and not everyone's committed. A lot of people still hold on to, I want to stay in the related field. But if you want to make that jump, you know, what you learn in banking or any industry has some transferability, and we can help folks figure out project manager in banking is applicable to a project manager in energy or manufacturing and guide them in that process.
Steve on Facebook writes, are students with disabilities a part of the programming, and is there the support to have those students participate?
We do have pathways. They're not apprenticeships, but the pathways do reach out to that at Central Piedmont Community College.
But could they
College.
Be apprenticeships? I mean, not everybody with a disability.
They can, and Goodwill particularly works with that in the construction industry. And we are, as a matter of fact, exploring how we could expand that.
A lot of foreign employers, I am told, do not understand our educational system, which is puzzling to me because I thought everybody understood everything about America. They're not familiar with high schools and how they function. But I understand that since we've been able to increase the pool of German-recognized talent, that kind of offsets that, because if Germany recognizes it, other European companies will recognize it, and that gives us a competitive advantage. Is that right?
Yeah, I think that's true. I think, you know, the program Central Piedmont has, the Chamber Award in Germany, I forget which chamber does it.
IHK Karlsruhe.
Mary says that very well. You know, by getting that dual recognition,
yeah.
you know, that's a way to attract talent, because when the German companies show up and you can show the pool of talent in terms they recognize, oh, you've got folks here recognized by our chamber back home, that means that there's that sort of seal of approval.
Mm-hmm.
To grow jobs.
And I've been very impressed that the executives here from Germany or Switzerland or Austria don't try to impose their system. They do, when they're here, they do understand our high school system, and they work within that to their credit.
Okay. Germany, because we have so many companies from Germany, and CPCC saw that and got on board with providing them with providing students with the education needed by these German companies. Now Germany has taken a look at CP, I'm told, and are bringing you over there to teach their folks what you're doing.
I think that part of what they want is to have international apprenticeships so that they send people from their companies here and vice versa.
And these are best practices they're looking
yes.
for. How did CP learn the best practices?
From the Germans. And I think we probably adapted a little bit to fit the American way.
Okay. Craig, you said that we are looking at this through the employer's eyes. They don't want a contract from each country or each school. They want a single point of contact. Does this collaborative bring them that?
Well, we hope so. We know that what we hear continuously in the market from employers is that despite we know that they're still underemployed and unemployed there, that they cannot find the workers, medium skill otherwise. They just can't find the workforce. So obviously partnering with them through things like this collaborative will help dramatically in terms of finding ways to close the skills gap and also help create employment in the local region.
And we're kind of developing a system. You say we don't really have a system yet. Is that what this does, develops a system to make this whole thing like a greased wheel?
It does, and Mary can speak to that better than I can. Tony has created initially a template that he used, which was designed to help identify where some of the workforce readiness or workforce training programs were. And we're trying to expand upon that. We're trying to look across these 14 campuses and determine, you know, what those competitive assets are and where the gaps are and how we should plug them.
And then we can be a unified region because, you know, when Germany comes in, we're kind of talking about Germany a lot, but when the Germans come in, it's not just Charlotte. It's the region that they're looking at. And they think of us that in terms of the Carolinas or at least a certain part. So we want to be, you referenced earlier, South Carolina and their package of incentives. It's not the incentives per se, but that it's a package, that you don't have to go here for this service and here for this service and over here, that united we can say
right.
This is what we bring in the region.
And because we're multi-county and now multi-state, you have to cut some red tape is what you're saying.
Absolutely. And we have to, as leaders, be united in that network.
Yeah, I've yet to find an employer that says when they're moving to Charlotte, they say, only look for my workforce in Charlotte or Mecklenburg County. They want to draw a circle about 50 miles around downtown Charlotte and look in that region. That's 14 to 16 counties that they want to look for the talent.
Yeah, we've talked about educational response to the need for workforce talent. We've talked about on other programs the need for public-private partnerships for this. We've talked about community colleges and chambers of commerce and government bodies listening to what employers want. What piece of this, aside from providing the jobs, is contributed by employers? What role do they, should they play in all of this? Because the public at large hears some of these conversations and thinks, you know, we're becoming the training ground for companies that used to train their own people. Why should we do it? They're making all the money.
Yeah, I mean, the role of the employer has evolved a lot over the past few decades. The one big thing we hear a lot from employers is we can train people in anything. I mean, they can graduate and know the theoretical. It's how do you get the hands-on experience? And all too often, both graduates from undergrad or CPCC, or even high school, have never really spent time practicing what they learned in a real business setting. Internships are harder to come by. We'd like to see every CMS graduate have at least one internship because that exposes them to what the high-demand jobs are. But we only do about 1,000 a year, and we need about 8,000 a year. Mm. So we need more businesses to open up their doors, factory tours, job shadowing, internships, apprenticeships. And if we don't get that, you're always going to have this disconnect because, A, people don't want to go into those areas because they've never experienced it, and, two, they're always going to get in the HR office and find they don't have the experience to get your foot in the door.
It's a great answer, but I'm not sure it answered my question.
No. Well, maybe we can answer it this way.
Okay.
Mary can can attest to some of the grants that they've received, Siemens, for example, mm-hmm. to help fund some of the programs that they've developed.
And their president of North America at Siemens is a great advocate that companies need to step up and do more training. And he says that he uses the example of a Ford 150, that the parts in that from 15 years ago are completely different. So you have to train a workforce when things are so different. And Siemens, even though they're a manufacturing company and that's how people think of them, it's the integrated technology. So the software is so important. So people have to be trained in that.
We've been talking a lot about foreign companies or companies that are based in here from other countries. Are American companies on board with the same kind of thing? Do they see a need for apprenticeships and for workforce development in their own? And are they on board with this the way the German companies we've been talking
about?
They
absolutely see workforce development. The apprenticeship is a little slower, and we are in a marketing position with some of the American companies. But for instance, Zurich Insurance just decided that they were going to have apprenticeships, and they partnered with Harper Community College in Chicago.
Mm-hmm. The U.S. Department of Commerce lists the Charlotte region as the fastest growing export region in the country. Site Selection magazine lists Charlotte in the top 100 global metros. Is that because of what is happening here with things like the Charlotte, the Regional Collaborative for a Global Economy, or are these statistics why the collaborate came into being?
We think that the whole global vision is responsible for helping move it along. It would have happened to some degree, but we think that there is more intensity. Craig mentioned the Brookings Institute earlier, and they have 10 traits of globally competitive cities. And the number one, they say, is leadership with a worldwide view. So what we think we have done is increase the worldwide view, and as a result of that, some of these things are happening.
We hear a lot about the woeful state, I put that in quotes, woeful state of American primary and secondary education, and those perceptions may or may not be accurate. But how does our system of K through 12 education prepare young people today for the jobs that you're talking about, and even for the folks that come through CPCC? Do you have to do a lot of catching up just to get them ready for the programs that we've been talking about this morning?
There are different emphasis in different schools. And, for instance, Olympic gets a lot of attention in this community for advanced manufacturing. And they have partnered with Bosch Rexroth, which is a company that has given them substantial equipment so that they can work on it. And they are a primary source for apprentices because business realizes that. So there are partnerships that are incredibly strong between business and CMS in this case.
But to your point about, you know, are graduates work ready? I don't think they see that as their mission nationwide. I think it's
K-12 system. They don't see their mission as getting kids ready for work.
If you look at what we put our emphasis on, it's about getting them to the next stage of education. So most of the emphasis is on putting people into some sort of post-secondary. But yet not everyone goes to post-secondary, so we're sort of missing the boat a little.
But if you graduate from high school and you can't read or comprehend what you've read, if you have trouble with fundamental math, you're not ready to work.
No.
You're certainly not ready for college, but you're not ready to work. So my question was, is that happening? How in this region, are K through 12 schools helping you do what you're trying to do, or do they have to come to a place like CPCC and spend the first year just catching up on what they don't know to get ready to go into what they'd like to do?
We're seeing a lot of remediation.
In math particularly.
Once you close that gap, can that gap be closed quickly and efficiently so that the skills gap can then be closed?
Yes, it can. And we have introduced ways that you don't have to be in remedial math forever. You take a test and you realize that it might be this part of algebra that you can't do. And so then you can take courses that can be 4 weeks or 6 weeks. It doesn't have to be the entire semester so that you move much quicker and the students don't get bored.
We've talked a lot in recent months about how Charlotte was recently revealed to be one of the least, how do I put this? It's really difficult if you are born into the lower economic strata to move up in Charlotte. It's really hard for that to happen. Does this kind of a collaborative situation allow that to happen? When it's in full swing, will we see people who can take advantage of it and move up the economic ladder?
We hope so. I think getting kids career paths so they know how to get out of poverty and what type of job leads to a lifestyle that they're looking for is critical. And again, opening doors at businesses to give kids exposure to what life is like in certain fields. Because you learn about careers from teachers and your parents is most how most kids get that exposure. And if you're not getting it at home and you're in a school where you're not getting it, where do you aspire? What do you get out of, where do I want to go next? That's part of the problem is not knowing that path to get out.
And I think this is separate from the collaborative, but JPMorgan Chase has launched a program to prepare young people without a four-year college degree. You call it New Skills at Work. It's a $250 million global initiative. Talk about that for a second.
Yeah, that is correct. We think that just as Mary and Steve have been talking about here today, that we've got to make sure that we can develop that demand-driven training to really plug the skills gap. And so to that end, through this program, we have funded a grant to CPCC, which helped create an associate degree in global logistics. We also subsequently funded a truck driving license program through a similar grant to CPCC in that same endeavor.
How will you know you've been successful with this global collaborative? And what would be the next step if you are successful?
Well, the next step would to build an infrastructure around it. The beauty of this is that it has grown from ground-up leadership. And we don't want to pop that bubble, but we also realize that we need some infrastructure to it, and other cities who are global in nature have that. In terms of the how will we know, I think the foreign direct investment that Craig mentioned earlier, where foreign companies are investing here in something other than in stock, and the economic developers in terms of the site selection coming here.
Mary Vickers Cuck, Dean of Harris Campus of the Business and Industry Learning at CPCC. It's a mouthful. Steve Partridge, President and CEO of Charlotte Works with the Workforce Development Board, and Craig May, Market Manager of JPMorgan Chase Middle Market Banking in North and South Carolina. Thank you all for the hour.
Thank you.
Charlotte.